what does it mean to be good when survival itself demands compromise? In Anarwadi, a Mumbai slum nestled between luxury hotels and an international airport, 3,000 people navigate this impossible question daily. They live behind a wall plastered with advertisements for Italian floor tiles promising beautiful forever, a cruel irony for families whose homes could vanish with the next monsoon or government bulldozer. This is where Abdul Hussein, a 16-year-old garbage sorter, has mastered an essential philosophy: keep your head down, trust no one, and never get involved in your neighbor's troubles. He believes the better he knows someone, the more he'll dislike them, a survival strategy born from watching how quickly friendship turns to betrayal when everyone is desperate. His world consists of sorting bottle caps with plastic linings from pure aluminum, earning rupees while dodging corrupt police and sick goats nosing through his recyclables. Yet even Abdul's careful distance cannot protect him from the violence that erupts when proximity and poverty collide. Anarwadi exists between two Indias. From certain angles, residents watch Bollywood stars arriving at the nearby Intercontinental Hotel for parties with ice sculptures and white carpets. Rahul works temporary shifts there, returning with tales of opulence that feel like science fiction. This proximity creates psychological torture unique to urban poverty. You can literally see what you're missing, smell expensive perfumes mixing with your sewage lake, hear laughter from people whose single meal costs more than your monthly income. By government standards, almost no Anarwadians qualify as poor. The reality differs. Only 6 residents among thousands have permanent jobs. Families trap rats and frogs for dinner, boiling them with neem leaves to mask the taste. Tuberculosis and dengue fever spread through cramped quarters with 4 toilets for several hundred people. The airport's new management has been tasked with raising Anarwadi along with 30 other settlements. Mumbai wants to compete with Singapore and Shanghai, and slums have become an embarrassment the city can no longer afford. Asha Wagekar, a 39-year-old kindergarten teacher and Shiv Sena devotee, has mastered power brokering in Anarwadi. She studies corporator Subhash Sawant's intimidation tactics, making supplicants wait uncomfortably, weaponizing eye contact like a graduate student. Unlike reformed slumlord Robert Pyers, Asha dismisses guilt with a hand flutter. Corruption isn't moral failure, it's one of few pathways for poor people to climb socially. Her daughter Manju runs the slum's only educational initiative while pursuing higher education. But Asha views her beautiful daughter as a strategic asset for maximum social advantage. Her ultimate ambition? Becoming corporator of Ward 76, capitalizing on legislation requiring female candidates. Meanwhile, 12-year-old Sunil develops his own survival strategies. Despite his small stature, he possesses extraordinary people-reading skills honed at Sister Paulette's orphanage, where he learned how charities curate appearances for Western donors. Perpetually hungry, Sunil innovates dangerous scavenging techniques, collecting trash from a treacherous ledge above the Mithi River, driven to prove his small body contains a large spirit. The Hussein family's modest renovations, a stone cooking shelf, a window, ceramic tiles, trigger dangerous resentment in Anarwadi's fragile ecosystem. Their neighbor Fatima, known as the One Leg due to her congenital disability, has spent her life hearing she was born wrong. After her 2-year-old daughter Medina drowned in suspicious circumstances, Fatima seemed oddly liberated, wearing dramatic makeup, taking lovers, boasting about her beauty. When Kikashin confronts Fatima over loud music, their argument escalates. Fatima threatens to put your family in a trap, then locks herself in her hut and sets herself on fire. As she lies injured, she announces, "It is because of these people that I have done this," implicating the Husseins. At Cooper Hospital, she receives newfound attention from Anarwadi residents. Though Asha attempts to broker a settlement, Fatima tells police that Abdul beat her, driving her to self-immolation. In a world where powerless people cannot strike at those who actually oppress them, they strike at whoever is within reach, usually their equally powerless neighbors. Abdul's surrender turns violent as officers beat him, targeting his hands, the tools of his livelihood, while demanding he confess to setting Fatima on fire. Zarunase scrambles to free her family, purchasing a fake school record showing Abdul as 16 to keep him out of the brutal Arthur Road jail. At Dongri Detention Center, Abdul experiences unexpected rest and finds himself sympathizing with fellow detainees. A doctor examining him offers to declare him 17 for 2,000 rupees. When Abdul can't pay, the doctor surprisingly rules him 17 anyway, confessing that meager government salaries force them to take bribes, revealing a world full of people suffering like himself. One afternoon, Abdul meets the Master, a pudgy Hindu who delivers impassioned speeches about virtue and sacrifice. Abdul weeps, not from pain like with the police, but from inspiration. He resolves to be more righteous, refusing stolen goods, not lying about Fatima's accusations, even if it prolongs his detention. Though his family values him only for labor, the Master's talk of respectability gives Abdul hope that even an awkward, uneducated boy can choose honor. The monsoon transforms the sewage lake into an advancing threat. One July morning, Sunil finds a fellow scavenger lying injured in the mud, bloody leg damaged, calling for help. Hours pass as Anawadians walk by, absorbed in their own troubles. Police collect his body, marking him unidentified and claiming tuberculosis without an autopsy. Three more bodies appear in following days. Rumors spread that the one leg has cursed them, that their slum faces demolition. Then Kalu, a 15-year-old thief with a talent for movie impersonations, is found dead behind a flowering hedge near Air India's gates. Though murder is evident, Inspector Jadhav quickly declares tuberculosis as the cause, and Kalu's body is cremated with evidence disappearing from police files. The Sahar police station maintains its perfect murder detection rate by erasing inconvenient deaths. Sanjay Shetty tells Zarunasa he witnessed Kalu's attack. Terrified of both killers and police, Sanjay flees to his mother's home in Dharavi, where he consumes rat poison. He dies 2 hours later, police classifying his death as a heroin addict suicide. The spot where Kalu died quickly returns to normal. In a modernizing city, certain lives are embarrassments and certain deaths matter not at all. When the Husseins finally reach trial, early testimonies bring unexpected hope. Priya admits she wasn't present during the alleged fight, and Dinesh testifies that police fabricated his witness statement entirely. Judge Chauhan grows frustrated with translation delays, dictating abbreviated versions that might lose crucial details. In July, Judge Chauhan declares the Husseins not guilty. The prosecution had miserably failed to establish guilt beyond reasonable doubt. Yet, justice remains incomplete. Abdul's separate trial in juvenile court drags on through 2009 and 2010, trapped in bureaucratic limbo. The experience leaves an indelible mark. Once idealistic, Abdul grows cynical. "For some time, I tried to keep the ice inside me from melting. But now, I'm just becoming dirty water, like everyone else." After the elections, bulldozers arrive at Anawadi's periphery. The beautiful forever wall comes down, and the sewage lake is filled. When Fatima's younger daughter spots something gleaming, she darts under a lowering bulldozer shovel to retrieve it, a heavy steel cooking pot worth 15 rupees. She runs back beaming, lifting her treasure high. The question remains, if everything around you is crooked and crumbling, is it possible to make anything lie straight? Perhaps the answer lies in small acts of dignity, a boy choosing honesty despite its cost, a girl risking danger for 15 rupees. In a world that treats certain lives as disposable, simply insisting on your own humanity becomes a radical act.